Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, August 23rd. Hi, Rachel.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Good.
Feeling good today? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I'm at the up and up today, too. I don't know what it is, but I'm just bouncy and that, which is good, you know, because it's so hard for me to get up in the morning. I got to tell you.
I worked out yesterday. It made it easier to get up in the morning.
Really?
Yeah, for sure.
That's what they say, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to do that.
I noticed the difference.
I need to do that. Yeah, I know. I'm like irritated because I got ants in my house, like in the kitchen, and it irritates me because I keep everything clean. I mean, because I don't leave any food out.
Does your air work again?
No.
Maybe
we're into the third month now.
Well, maybe that's why, because the temperature changed. Because maybe it's more like outside. Maybe it seems more like outside since it's warmer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. But they're looking for food. They don't find it, but they keep coming, right? So I finally said the hell with it. I didn't want to get a spray because then you have to clean up all the dead ants. So I got those traps, you know, those baits they have. And they say what happens is the ants go in, they bite off the bait, and they take it back to the queen, and that kills the whole colony. So I don't know. You know, it doesn't work right away. I mean, they don't, like, particularly stand in line to get in. But this morning I got up and I saw a couple dead ones and the rest were gone. So maybe it's working,
you know? Yeah, I've used them before.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. They have those, like, roach motels where they stick to the fucking thing.
Yeah.
But here it's gross. A whole different idea, you know? So I thought, wow, you know, what a clever thing to do. But at any rate, so that's what I have. I've had to deal with the past couple of days. And, of course, no air conditioning. I'm going into the third month, and the landlord hasn't found it urgent enough to do. So we're going to play around a little bit. We're going to play some games, he and me, I guess,
The
money. But anyway, in a few minutes, we're going to be joined by our guest today, a fascinating guest, filmmaker, and we always love those, and especially ones that Catherine sends us, because she always has, like, award-nominated and winners and things like that, you know. So she only deals with the good people.
Of course.
Yeah, creme de la creme, right? The top of the cream, whatever. But at any rate, we can't go, to the order of the day without talking about the president yesterday. Did you get a chance to listen to anything? Or
I saw some clips.
You did?
Yeah.
And was it pathetic?
Of course.
Yeah, right? I know.
He's the worst.
I don't understand. I really don't understand, you know. And
I heard reports this morning, him and McConnell haven't spoken in weeks. And they, like, just the last time they spoke, it ended in just like a screaming match or something.
Really?
They are not on speaking terms.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, everybody's turning on him because he's turned on us, I think, from the beginning.
And then the head of the science envoy, like, resigned today. And this is the second time someone has sent a resignation letter to Trump, where each first letter of each sentence spells something out. The last week spelled resist, and today it spelled impeach. Every letter of the first sentence of each paragraph.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Don't they call it crosstex or something? What did they call it?
Well, they said it was like a cryptic message or something.
Oh, okay. But when they take, like, a name and they do the first letter from each one as a sentence, it's got a name to it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There is a name for it. I just don't know. But isn't that funny? Like, the little messages.
It is.
Because they can't come right out and be like, yo, this guy's crazy. You need to impeach him because, you know, they got to watch their backs. But if they can subliminally, like, leave messages like that, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But it is kind of fucked up at the same time. How scary, you know what I mean? Like, everyone's dropping like flies pretty much except for his family.
Right.
Because they can't.
Exactly.
Can't leave him.
They're stuck there, right?
This guy forever.
Wow. I'm really curious to see how this will pan out because everybody's
like,
against him.
You know how we see it as like a slow demise, you know, like, why is this taking so long? But in, like, retrospect, if you, like, kind of, it's only been It's been 6 months or whatever.
They're saying
there's
about 200
so much
and some days.
Shit has happened. But if you looked at it on a map, you'd be like, oh, my God. You know, but
that's
we're so jaded because it just happened so fast.
Right.
So, like, it is kind of happening really rapidly. I, you know, by the end of the year, we'll look back and be like, 6 months from now, can you believe that Anthony Scaramucci? Like, we won't even remember that shit. And that alone, each scandal alone in this administration is enough for like
one administration. Right.
So
no, that's true. I have to agree. And you know what? I was doing some soul searching yesterday and stuff, and I thought, you know what? I have to put country before party. And you have to go with
it's all of us. It's
because
again, the party is not looking out for you.
They don't.
And
if they don't turn on him, I'm going to abandon
like,
the party.
Us as people, like, we would look, like, if I saw you hurting on the side of the road, I would literally look out for you. And these people would never take a second out of their time of day. You know what I'm saying? It's just like.
No, that's true, you know. And the thing is that I'm encouraged that many people are turning on him. But if they don't, like, do something, then they really don't represent me, you know.
It's crazy.
And it is crazy. And you watch it. And what puzzles me still.
We don't have we literally don't have a leader. Like, someone we have a figure, per se. But someone capable of leading the country when in time of, like, need,
right?
We're on the brink of, like, 17 war. We're fighting with literally everyone. We're a bully.
But that's been like that before.
I get that, but tensions are so escalated right now that at any moment, like, if we broke out.
But this has happened before, Rachel. But I know what you're saying, that in time of tension,
however,
you don't want someone like him
exactly,
at the time.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I hear you.
And you know, so we'll see. We have to hope for the best.
Did you read about that scandal of Steve Munchkin? I don't know if I'm pronouncing
it. Mnuchin, right?
Mnuchin, or whatever,
yeah,
his wife.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. She tweeted something?
What she did was she put up this Instagram post of her exiting, like, a Air Force One, like a government plane with her husband.
Right.
And she's like, hashtagging Hermes scarf, hashtag Fendi bag, or whatever.
Really?
She's literally, like, in a state that is one of the poorest, like, states in the Kentucky. You know what I mean? And like, so
she's
a woman.
She's flaunting her wealth.
She's just out of, and she's also half, she's not even, like, she's half Scottish. You know, she's not even, like, American-born citizen, right? So someone from Kentucky, I assume, or someone, obviously, like, commented back to her and said something. What did they say? Oh, she called her a deplorable and basically, like, put her in her place. And the response back that his wife was just so incredibly horrible and just so out of, like, she called this woman out of touch, but this response was so out of touch and so beyond unnecessary to basically, like, rub it in her face, her wealth in this woman's face, and just. It's just so terrible.
Yeah,
it's
all around
terribleness.
I guess she apologizes now, but who cares, right? We don't really care if she apologizes.
I mean, but these are the people that are representing us as citizens and who we look to be our, like, not our caregivers, but to take our needs into consideration, and they would never look out for anyone other than themselves.
Right. But what puzzles me is that they're still staunch supporters of Trump, and they're not white supremacists, but I see on my feed.
But you don't know
that. Well, not publicly, at least. Okay, let's put it that way. But you can't say that everybody that supports him is a white supremacist.
I don't
That's
think
like a
everyone who supports Trump is a white supremacist, but at some point you gotta, like, draw the line and be like, if you at this point still stand
support
with this
him,
person,
right.
Your values do not match up with mine or with the majority of the country. And that I can't, I'm uncomfortable with people who align themselves with someone like that.
Yeah.
As a Jew, as a woman, as someone who's an ally of gay people, as someone who, you know, of people, minorities or whatever, like that makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, you know, we still have a strong government that, you know, even without a good president, at least they can block him. You know, he can't do everything that he wants to do by himself. You know, he has to get some approval. But I suppose he can take us to war without approval from Congress.
The thing about
right?
the damage that Trump is being done now, mm-hmm. the effects won't be felt until years late. I mean, now right. we're feeling some effects, but like the IRS, for instance, is severely underfunded. I mean, are we really complaining about the IRS being, understaffed and underfunded? But what I'm saying is at some point, that's going to affect, because that's when they start going after the, people. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. we will see the effects of what the administration that Trump is doing down the road. I mean, he has put people in positions of power, and in charge of budgets, who are going to fuck things up royally for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And until those people get taken out of office, who knows what kind of decisions they're making.
Yeah. Well,
is luckily you have grown children, right. no longer in school, but like kids are going to suffer. A lot of programs, are being cut. There's not going to be a lot of funding for people who can't afford, are of certain, backgrounds and demographics, and they're not going to have the same opportunities, and a lot of people are going to suffer. And that's just what's sadly going to happen.
Okay. Well, let's pick up the pace a little bit and get into some happier things, right, Rachel?
Well, I mean, it's just like, of course, at a time to be a comedian and a time to be a talk show be in today's world, it is... I mean, like, Trump is so in our face, and, like, it's everywhere, and it's hard to... I'm guilty of it. I go home, I watch MSNBC. Rachel Maddow is a personal hero of mine. I love her. But it's not like... I can only imagine, like, if this was 4 years ago when Obama was in office, we would have things to talk about, but it would be like, oh, my God, did you see that picture of him and that little kid today and, like, him dancing on Ellen? And you may not love that, but that's still a person that... we can enjoy, because he's not out there ruining people's lives, being racist, right. being anti-Semitic or whatever, and so in your face his, so it would be a different conversation, but it is hard to come in every day, and talk about him. But it is our, we have to do it. It has to be talked about, because...
Absolutely. That's why we do. But we also, we're not going to solve the country's problem.
No.
And I think, if we touch on it a little bit, that's fine. I'm all for it. I brought it up, and
it's a new
I know.
I mean, the bottom line, it's just more like the guy is still having campaign rallies 6 months in.
I know. Ridiculous. It's unbelievable, right?
It's just
unbelievable, man. It's almost November again. It's been almost a year since we fucking had the election.
Yeah,
and he's still worrying about that. Yeah, I mean,
has anything else
this.
Happened in the news? Like, is there anything else going
happening
on?
In the news?
Yeah,
there are things, but who cares? We got the guest now. We got to get to our guest, okay? So we're out of time as far as headlines and everything.
I'm just saying, if there's anything else we could have, I'm always looking for things, but that just seems to be the only thing that news.
No, that's true. That's true. About. Well, Mel B walked off of America's Got Talent. Like, who cares, right?
Yeah.
But you look at it, and it's like a
train wreck.
But
maybe that would have been bigger news had, Trump not dominated.
If it wasn't Trump, right? Yeah, I know. Well, at any rate, folks, we're going to bring in our guest now, who's been more than patient sitting here. And we're joined by Stephanie O'Neill. Welcome to the show, Stephanie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you for sitting through this. I know. Are you visiting or do you live here?
I'm in LA. Yeah.
Oh, you live here?
Yes.
So you're exposed to our news all the time, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But are you originally from the UK?
No, I'm from the Bay Area near San Francisco.
Really? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Yeah, it's good.
So I thought you're like, I assumed, because Catherine brings most of her clients are from England, so I assumed, Stephanie's going to be from England. But no, she's an LA person, and you were born and raised in San Francisco.
In the Bay Area.
The Bay Area.
Yeah.
What was that like? Did you like it there? Do you still go back?
Yeah, I do. I go back. My my parents have since moved to Orange County, so they're down here. So that brings more family to visit here. But
that's true.
My aunts and uncles and cousins, I get to go back quite a bit.
Yeah. Do you you have siblings?
I have one brother, yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay. And so you grew up there. You say the Bay Area, so that's not necessarily San Francisco, but in the area, right?
Yeah, I'm
there's a lot of small towns.
There's suburbs. I'm from Fremont. There's a lot.
Yeah, I've heard of Fremont,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And that's part of the Silicon Valley, right? Or it was at one time. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't hear many companies there anymore, but I remember in the beginning, there were companies there like high tech and stuff. So.
Yeah, Tesla's up there.
Oh, Tesla's up there in Fremont?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, there you go. You see, they're on the map again.
Yeah.
So that's cool. So did you, was it a good area of town in Fremont?
Yeah.
It was a good town. So you come from a good background and everything,
yeah,
right?
Solid background. Good childhood. I grew up.
Were your parents college educated?
Yes, they both are.
They both are. So you turned out to probably go to college too, right?
I did go to college.
They expected you to go.
I did. Yeah, that was my... they definitely had hoped that I would go, and I did end up going after high school. I went to UC Santa Barbara.
Oh, really?
So and then I studied theater, so I'm not so sure how they felt.
Yeah, they weren't sure. But at least you went to school. What the hell, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Well, you know, we don't come out the way our parents want us to, but what can you do? You know, we're individuals, right?
Yeah, you start making your own decisions at some point.
Exactly. And if you say, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to be a lawyer, then it's not going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
So what was UC Santa Barbara like? Did you like it here?
Yeah, I mean, it was a fantastic time. I had a great experience. I had very close friends. It was kind of a wonderful experience for me in that I was in a BFA program, so I was studying theater. I had a small community that I had classes with constantly, so there was kind of that small feel as well being in a very large campus.
That's so true, right? So it's sort of like a little community, a little clique or something. Yeah. Very cool. So you took theater there,
mm-hmm.
you said?
That's right.
And did you have any background before you went to college as far as theater? Or at least did you know what you wanted to do?
I did a lot of shows and plays. I mean, growing up, that was what I...
Really? So you were like, what, an actress?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't... I did community theater. I did it in high school.
Right,
and
right.
I was kind of just building it, and I was loving it. And as I went to UCSB, that's what I ended up...
I see. Okay, because I'm asking because some people get into like theater or film, for example, but not to be actors, not in front of the camera.
Right.
But did you have the aspirations to be an actress in front of the camera?
Yeah, I had... I think... I mean, I just loved... theater, and that was kind of, I loved watching movies, and that was the direction, and as I got into the program, I ended up really loving, like, voice and movement, so I became kind of, you know, the whole thing kind of opened up. I mean, as in college, a lot of your experiences open up, and so...
That's true.
That's just what I gravitated towards, and I had a great group of people that I got to work with, and so, it just has evolved throughout. Yeah,
very nice. So you went to school, and after that, what did you decide to do? Did you move after that to L.A.? Or?
I moved back to San Francisco, I lived in the city there for a short amount of time, and I that was kind of always my plan. I was going to go back and I was going to live in San Francisco because I loved that city.
Right.
And
work there as an actress, right?
Yeah. And then my boyfriend at the time, we were dating in school, and he moved to L.A. and I moved to San Francisco, and that was that. And then I moved to L.A.
Because he was here or what?
Yeah. I mean, it was like there was multiple things, but
right.
You kind of are in this... you're just moving forward and you're like, okay, well, either we're going to stay together. And I mean, people have long distance all the time, but that was just what happened for me.
That's true. So you didn't like the long distance and you decided, to move here. How long did that take?
It wasn't that long, actually. No. I think I moved to San Francisco and I loved it. And I just, I actually traveled to New York and was visiting with a friend out there. And, I think just, what I was wanting to do, I didn't have a clear idea, but I wanted to be an actor for sure, but how to accomplish that was like a much bigger question. And I was out visiting a friend in New York, and another friend of mine was looking for a roommate in L.A., and I was like, yes, I'll move to L.A. I'm ready.
So it worked out. Yeah.
Opened up
very cool. So, and did you stay with that boyfriend after you moved?
We did stay together for a good amount of time. We are no longer together now, but yeah, it was a good relationship. Yeah,
I know. Sometimes people move across the world to be with with another person, and then it doesn't work out, and you're like, "What am I doing here?"
Yeah.
I mean, this happened to me, you know.
Once. Did it?
Yeah, I moved to another country to be with a woman.
What country?
South Africa.
Oh wow!
I was living. The funny thing is that I was here, I'd been living here already for all these years, and then I went to Israel and lived there for a year after my first divorce because it was hard for me to handle. I needed to be with family a little bit and to get away from this. So, and there I met this woman, and she decided that she liked me, right? And she was a friend of my cousin's wife, so I wasn't sure what was going on, you know, but so she called and stuff, and you know, things happened, and I ended up saying, you know what, let me come to South Africa for a year, because I already also had my cousin there, and I thought, what the heck, you know, but I really like started desiring being with her, so I moved there for a year, and after that she broke up with me, and later we found out my cousin intervened. It was like a whole conspiracy bullshit, but at the time it seemed like she was dumping me, and I couldn't understand why. You know, it was like amazing, but so I was.
What was it like? Did you like living there?
Yeah, I loved living there.
Was it beautiful?
Yeah, very beautiful. A lot of violence, though. So really? A lot of people leave to, you know, they come here, they go to Australia, Canada, because they can't stand it anymore. You know, it's too much. Yeah. People live like behind electric fence. Get attacked all the time, so, and it's gotten worse, you know, but at any rate, I'm describing 20 years ago,
yeah.
You know, so I don't know so much about how things are there, but I know people that have moved here do not really want to go back. But you ask me if it's beautiful, it's very beautiful, you know, especially you go to Cape Town and places like that. I lived in Johannesburg, but Cape Town probably one of the most beautiful
places. What is
Cape
Town like?
Cape Town is beautiful as a mountain, right by the beach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they have a very piece of land between the mountain and the beach. They have Table Mountain there. It's totally flat on the top, and sometimes there's a cloud right over it. They call it the tablecloth.
Oh, wow.
That's what they call
it.
Is
the water warm?
Like, the water's nice.
Yeah.
And you have, and when you go to the Cape itself, which is another drive of half an hour south from Cape Town, that's really the southernmost part of Africa where the two oceans meet,
you know,
the Indian Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean. So that's pretty cool.
Did you end up staying there then? After
I was, for a little while. But, yeah, I guess we totally digressed. But my point was that, yeah, I stayed there for a while after that, you know. But then I missed my kids and I came back. But I've heard many stories of people moving. And after that, we had a long-distance relationship for a while. And I hated that. I don't like long-distance relationships, you know.
Never worked. You can't
be with a person when you want to be with them. How, you know, I mean, what's a relationship about? You know, being on the phone. Okay, so now the Skype and FaceTime and stuff. But still, you know, you want to reach over and touch your partner and they're not there.
Well,
so it comes down to just talking all the time, and that can get you into trouble. Because when you're together, you don't talk so much. There's also body language and physical contact and things like that.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't, my brother actually, he met his now wife. They were in Italy, and she's from Denmark, and he moved back to L.A.
Oh, really?
And so they had a long-distance relationship for almost, I think, 2.5 years.
Oh, my God.
Wow. But you kind of have to, I think, I mean, he specifically said, like, they knew where it was leading to. Otherwise, you know, it either it's going to move forward and you're going to come together, or it's going to dissipate and you're... Yeah.
That's true. So they decided to keep going and keep it alive.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And
well, that's a good story.
Mm-hmm. Works out sometimes.
Yeah. Awesome. So, and we're going to get into your movie, but I just want to introduce yourself again. Stephanie O'Neill, you're the producer of a movie called Boys.
Correct.
Right? The director is Eyal Resch, and hopefully he'll call in during the show. He's in Israel now.
Yes, he's in Israel.
But as you might imagine, I saw the name Eyal. I knew I'm dealing with an Israeli, so I was looking forward to it, but he's not here in L.A. right now. But we are so glad you came on, and we'll talk about the movie and everything. I just wanted to tease this a little bit if he calls, so people know what we're talking about. But I just want to find a little more about you, because it's interesting that you moved here. Now, what did you find Hollywood to be like? Was it more or less than you expected? Did you have any expectations?
Well, coming from Northern California, that there's somewhat of a, I don't know, like LA is not exactly like the place to.
It's like competitive. You guys don't like us, right?
But LA could care. I mean, LA loves the Bay Area. You know,
there's no LA loves the Bay Area. It is
animosity, which is fine. You know,
maybe they're jealous. I don't know what it is, man. But they've got the best place. You know,
yeah, it's just a great smaller, place to be. And I think that's for me was why I there's a lot of opportunities here that were just different and what I wanted to pursue.
Right, for your career, you need to be here.
Yeah, this is a place that I could feel expansion in a much larger way.
Right, yeah. But it does have its downside in LA, you know. The funny thing is this morning I'm looking at Facebook and one of the people that I know posts something like, I've had enough of the dating scene in LA. I'm moving out. Everybody's a user. Everybody's a gold digger. Everybody's this. And he's like going on and on and on. I'm getting the fuck out of here and all this. And I'm like, wow, people actually air out all this fucking dirty laundry, you know?
That's why I love Facebook. It's like,
you know?
Yeah, but I like watching the train wreck. Not gonna lie.
But to show you how, you know, this town can really affect people, you know?
Yeah, it's tricky.
It can eat you up alive if you're not.
I think it's all about also the communities in which you surround yourself with.
Right.
Because you can say that about any place. There's going to be shitty people everywhere. Yeah, like, where is he dating? At the club?
Well, surprise. But there's generalizations about this town, you know? I mean,
of course. I think it's just about, like, what do you enjoy as a, like, what, like, if you blame it on others, like, you really have to look within. Like, maybe there's something going on within you, you know, that you have to work on.
Exactly.
That you're not attracting the right kind of people. Right,
exactly. You're looking in the wrong places or something.
Because I think LA is such a great place because, if anything, there's just always a different amount. There's always people, different kinds of people flooding in. You get a variety of people at, like, I mean, this is a huge city, so I think your odds of actually meeting someone, you know.
Right, are pretty high.
Are pretty good, you know.
I know.
You don't just, maybe don't spend all your time in LA. Go to the beach, you know, have him.
And not only that, but I think you're right about picking who you hang out with.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
I got to tell you, at this station here, we've been doing this for 10 years. I calculated I'm meeting about 30 people a day or so, okay? That's how many people come in here, probably 25 to 30 a day. And all I can tell you is I'm meeting the nicest people. So you can't say LA doesn't have nice people. You just have to know them a little bit more, maybe, and you need to know where you hang out, you know. Yeah, don't go to those clubs. Don't go to those where those gold diggers hang out because that's what they want.
That's what you're going
to
get.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I think it's, too, just kind of finding your way. Like, you come here, and it's just huge. It's massive, and you know, a lot of people don't know exactly where they're headed, and a lot of people are searching for a dream. And
a lot of aimlessness.
You need to have someone who's lived here who can put you down, you know, bring you down to earth and make you realistic about what to expect, you know.
Yeah, I think a million finding people, like, the simple pleasure, like going to the beach or just kind of getting a place to zone in a little.
Right.
But you also, LA is such a transient place in a sense of, like, people give up too easily here.
Right.
They'll come here in 6 months if something doesn't happen for him or her or whatever. They think, that's it. It's never going to happen for me. Like, LA will weed out people within, like, 6 months to a year if you're meant to be here.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? True. And it's like, just like anything else, you got to be here, establish yourself, your community, you know?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. You got to put in some work, you know?
Yeah.
So how long have you been in LA now?
I've been here.
You need to get much closer to the mic.
I've been here now almost 10 years.
Awesome. So you're an Angelino. I'm home.
Very much, this has become home for me.
And did you find, so you found your place here? You feel comfortable living here?
Yes, yeah. I've found many wonderful friends, and you know, it is true. Like, people come and people go, and I've met amazing people, and and just kind of the community continues to build. And like you say, you you meet people that you enjoy and you keep those people. And then, you know, the ones it you can miss the ones that are
passing by. The best part is like when you meet, that's what I love about LA, is like it's such a good city to meet someone, and then like if the, maybe you meet someone once and then like 2 years later they will mean something in your life,
right?
You know what I mean? It's happened to everyone, or you're
it
like
does everybody's got a message for you,
or
right?
Just like you briefly have like a, you know, experience, a experience or a relationship, or you work with someone and then you never see them again until 2 years later they show up in the background in your life, you know? It's crazy.
But what's nice too is it's LA is actually really connected, so like you know, like you can end up in New York and you're connected to somebody here, and in other places in the world too. So it starts to, you know, and I think that's just also time and life, you know, the path that it leads you through.
Right.
But it's it's a lot of like crossing paths and finding people again.
That's true. And obviously you met some great people in order to get into this film.
I did.
But what did you do before... So this film is the latest thing that you came out with? Is this what you've done most recently?
This is one of the ones that I've done most recently, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So how did you sort of like... get into the thing in the first place? I mean, you moved here. Did you find it... Well, you must have found it difficult to find roles and things like that.
Yeah, right? I think... I mean, I came to Los Angeles and just, you know, started auditioning, tried to figure out the path, getting an agent, you know, the basic list of things that you're supposed to do as an actor. And throughout, you know, time, I continued to do that. I was working. I enjoyed, I did like independence, short films, things like that. And as I was on sets, I started to kind of figure out the other sides of things. And that became interesting to me.
Yeah.
I, you know, worked all kinds of jobs, met lots of different people. I ended up working for Jose Rivera, who wrote Motorcycle Diaries.
Uh-huh.
And so in that experience, it was interesting to just, you know, writing him all the different stories, scripts that he was writing. I got to read a lot. And his wife also got into producing. So working with them, I had become much more aware of the producing side of things.
Right.
And that kind of opened the door to me in terms of like how to tell stories and how to share. I think going into auditions and enjoying that process.
Yeah, you realize that's where you belong, but you wanted to do more than just acting. Now, did you, did you like immediately want to like direct first before producing? Everybody's like,
wants
I want
to
direct, right?
I don't think that I think that I just was, honestly, I was teaching. I've always kind of worked freelance. So I just felt also that I was like, maybe producing might be a good skill to learn.
Right?
And feeling like that was already kind of coming to me. Like it was already just arriving in that way. I had been working for a writer. I had seen kind of going into different meetings with him. I had traveled and worked. We went to Armenia and did a project in a producing way there. So it was a lot of development, but it hadn't actually evolved into producing an actual project yet.
Yeah.
So it was all just kind of, I mean, it happened very organically. And in the same time, I was feeling frustrated as an actor because it was just, you know, I wasn't fitting into the roles. I wasn't getting the part. So I was somewhat, but just not to the extent that I wanted.
That you wanted.
And to feel like...
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge game of faith and trust, you know, in terms of and determination to do that.
So you took on producing, right? You decided you're going to take that on. Now, to me, that role as a producer for a film seems like almost insurmountable. I mean, it's like, obviously you start with smaller films, so it's easier, and then you can evolve, right?
Sure.
But even in a small film, I mean, it's up to you to get all the parts working, moving and working together, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was, Eyal was a wonderful partner. I mean, in so many ways, you know, this was hugely his baby. When I met him, he was actively looking for a producer to help him with this specific project. And we also collaborated on other, you know, work projects, you know, more promotional commercial side. And This one, though, was the one that, you know, when we discussed it, he really... It just kind of had made sense to me. The way that he approached it, the way that he spoke about it, I could... And from some of his past work that I had seen, I understood what he was trying to do. And really, it was just a conversation. I mean, we just connected, and I think... I understood what he wanted, you know, to an extent in a conversation. But, you know, there's something that you can kind of reach in communication and recognize, like, this could work, you know. And you have to take a chance and see if it's going to.
Right.
And I think that, you know, we both and have continued to have to keep, like, okay, how does this work together? Because, you know, there's...
It's crazy to me how much problem solving goes into just... That's just what a movie is, just constant problem solving. Yeah. And, like, maybe that's why I just need to be talent and not have to worry about
that.
Yeah,
right?
You know what I'm saying? Like, well, I am so not good at it in my personal life that to have, like... You have to have that skill of adaptation, problem solving, just keep moving forward. You know, well, you are a creator in a sense of creating solutions to problems you didn't know existed. You know,
well, and also it's also about how do you want to approach something. You know, this specific film felt like something to tackle in that it was, you know, it's a story about two young boys and their best friends. So we knew that casting these two boys was going to be the crux of our film.
Right, it's very crucial.
Yeah.
And how do you find two boys that are perfect for the role and that have the chemistry, right?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was that, and I think, you know, it was great to hear also as, you know, our production designers came on, as the DP came on, and then you start having the conversations about what you want it to look like. So there's just so many facets, and to me that's very exciting, you know, see, like, all of these things have to fall into place in order for this film to even work.
Right. So I mean, but do you sometimes get discouraged if someone, I mean, because people bail out sometimes, right? Things mm-hmm. like that. Do you panic when that happens? Because you rely on a lot of people.
I panic less now.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, there was something very magical about that experience because we had so many positive elements that came together. We did have to do a lot of work in terms of, like, permitting. And
let me interrupt you because I think Eyal may be calling.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, he just hung up because I didn't answer right away. I wanted you to finish the sentence.
Sorry.
But he didn't wait very long. So we'll have him call right back. But go ahead, finish your sentence. So,
I was just commenting on terms of, like, the permits and having to go and get approvals from all of these different neighborhoods.
And all that can create a problem.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, well, we're probably joined by Eyal. Eyal, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you?
Good. Eyal Resch, thank you for calling. I know you're calling from Israel, and we appreciate you calling.
Been.
Yeah, but I know it's not too late for you now, so we don't feel that bad for keeping you up late.
Exactly. Don't worry, Israel is anyway very hectic, so we're used to it.
Yeah, that's true. Can I get you, are you on a speakerphone? Can I get you to pick up the phone maybe? You'll sound a lot better.
Yes, is that better now?
Yeah, that's a little better. Yes, thank you. So, Eyal, thank you for calling in. A little bit about you. You're the director of the film Boys, and... we haven't even got to talking about it. I was hoping you'd call in, and we'll talk about it together, about the film. So you're obviously from Israel, as we mentioned before. Do you live here in L.A. or there? Where do you live most of the time?
I live in New York.
Oh, in New York.
And I'm bi-coastal. So So I moved between L.A. and New York in the last year.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
In L.A. I lived for 4 years before.
Oh, wow. Very nice. So how did you guys meet when you started collaborating and everything, Eyal? You and Stephanie.
We just sat together in a coffee shop. We met through a mutual friend. They worked together for the same people. And we kind of hit it off right away.
Wow.
It was an amazing connection. And for me, like all the people that I work with, and Stephanie in particular, it's like people to run with, right? So collaborations are not ending after one project, right? The idea is like to combine or to put together, to ensemble a team of people working together and running together on many, many, many projects.
Right.
So Stephanie's definitely a very important person to collaborate with in my artistic world,
right?
Or endeavors.
Yeah. Wow. So when did you start getting into film and everything? Where were you born in Israel? I'm curious.
I was born in Haifa in 1988, and then I went to an art high school, a very selective art high school in Tel Aviv, where I started studying film. I was always really, really interested in it. And it was a way for me to express myself. And as a little boy, I didn't know about any other way. So I was kind of like, you know, like improvising and making films. I didn't really know that this was what I was doing.
Yeah.
And then I finished high school and I was recruited to the army because we have to do that in Israel for 3 years. And I became the director of the cinema unit of the Israeli Air Force.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
So I made films for the army for 3 years.
What kind of films did you make for the army? Like creative stuff? Or what exactly would the army need with movies?
Well, it was mainly instructional videos to teach about systems and operations and methodologies that they wanted to teach. So it's not really creative, but I was always looking how to teach people using storytelling. So I was always looking for, like, you know, how to make it interesting and spicy. So I was telling stories, obviously not artistic ones. This I completed after I came to LA and went to CalArts. It was the other side that I was missing. But it was mainly an amazing boot camp of practical experience.
Yeah.
Just really being on set as a director every day for 3 years teaches you a lot.
Wow.
That's true. That's true. So you went to CalArts out here, which is cool. And what year were you going to school here?
It was 2012 to 15.
Oh, okay. So it's pretty recent. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, Boys is my thesis film, my CalArts thesis film.
Oh, I see. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the film. The film is called Boys. And, of course, we have Eyal Resch on the line and Stephanie O'Neill in the studio, the director and the producer of the film. Stephanie, tell us a little bit of the plot. What is the story about? It's a short film.
Correct. Yeah.
Right. So don't give us too much, but okay, at least the essence of it. Make us want to see it.
Yeah. Well, it's about two boys. It's set in 1999, and it's the first day of summer, and they are just free and happy to be out of school and enjoying each other's company. It's about two best friends, and it's just the night unfolds as they have a sleepover, and it's just about friendship and as they experience each other through the evening.
Wow, how cool. Now, Eyal, is this your story? Did you write the story?
Yes, I wrote the story, and it is my story. Yes.
Oh, I see. And this was, now, the movie is in English, I presume, right?
Yes.
Spoken in English. Eyal, with your Israeli background and stuff, it seemed to appeal to you to make the movie maybe a little more for the general public rather than just focus on a small audience, right? Is that why you went with the English version of the movie, or was that just a story?
Exactly. No, but I think there was also that there, but mainly for me, it's a universal story. Sexual awakening is not something that happens only in Israel or in LA. And I happened to be in LA as I did the film.
Right.
Yeah. So for me, the story is timeless and also placeless. Right.
Right. Right. Wow. That makes sense. So, so how long is the film, Stephanie?
It's about 14 minutes.
14 minutes, and you're able to tell a story there. That takes a lot of creativity, right? I mean, to be able to tell a story in 14 minutes.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a challenge.
Yeah. So you wrote the story based on your life, Eyal?
Right.
Oh, okay. So that's kind of easier to do, right? I mean, you're familiar with the character and everything. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, but would you say it's a true story, or is this just based on your life?
It's based on true events. It's obviously different. And I obviously, you know, kind of like I developed the characters differently. It's just an experience that I wanted to share.
Right.
It's not exactly my experience.
Right.
But it is a sexual awakening experience. So it's along the same lines of what I've experienced, but totally, totally different. Like there are a lot of stuff there that I intentionally made different because it is storytelling and it's not, you know, It's not a therapy session for me.
Right, exactly. You want to make it a little more engaging and interesting and so forth. Wow. So, Stephanie, exactly. When you presented with the story, what was your reaction?
I think it was just the both of us, we were discussing it, and I think, as they all just mentioned, it connected with me because even though it was is directly about these two boys, it felt very much relatable to me. It felt relatable to at any point for a young person to be growing up and to be experiencing
right.
a new awakening about themselves and maybe right. about, you know, with someone else.
Right, right. Very fascinating. Now, where can people see the film? I mean, do you show it like on the festival circuit?
Yeah, or it's been in the festival circuit. Right? And so we just had a showing at Holly Shorts. We've been at Outfest, LA Film nice. Festival. So it's making its rounds. And then AL and I are just discussing how then next is the, you know, once it's through with the festivals, where we share it.
Yeah. AL, is there a substantial audience for short films these days?
I think it's growing because content is becoming shorter because of the attention span nowadays.
So I
do believe that short films are coming back even stronger. It's no longer a proof of concept. It's
right.
actually a format or a medium of storytelling
right.
That is like more suitable to where we're at right now. It doesn't mean that I'm not developing longer formats, but it's what the story wants, right, or needs.
Right.
And I would also just add that if for more information about the film, we have a Facebook page, Boys Short Film, and whoever wants to, if you can get to a festival, we would love to share it with people in a private link.
Right. Oh, so people can watch it through a private link if they want to?
If they send us a message in private, yes.
Okay, so just go on Facebook, Boys the Movie, right? And
Boys the Movie or Boys Short Film. Yes.
Boys Short Film, okay. And that's right, I have it right here, Boys Short Film. The short film Boys, that's what the name is actually on
yes.
Facebook. But at any rate, now, so let me ask you this. I mean, this is a heavy subject. How do you get two kids to play in this, to take on such a challenging role, Stephanie? Were you both casting?
Doing
the casting?
We went into the casting sessions together.
Okay.
We went through a round of going through like Breakdown Express, which is the format here used in Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
And we had a lot of actors who had submitted. We yeah. invited quite a few to audition. And then prior to the audition, I did just send out a message to the parents just to make sure that they were very clear about what the content was. And so from yeah. there, I think we had about five boys actually show up to the audition. Uh-huh. And then we did go through a casting director again as well. But the first two or three boys that we saw of those boys, we found the two.
Really?
Yeah, it was...
It's almost like the first ones are the right ones.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know. I know it doesn't always work like that way, but no. I think that there was something, you know, we didn't know for sure right away, but they ended up being the ones that we did cast. And
what are the names of the two stars of the film?
Yeah, it's Wyatt Griswold and Pierce Joza.
Oh, okay, cool. And are they both L.A. people, L.A. kids?
Yes, one. They both come back, and Pierce is here in Los Angeles,
uh-huh.
and he's... Actually, he might be filming now, but he's been here acting quite a lot. And Wyatt has also been, he comes back and forth. I think he lives in Michigan.
Oh, so. Okay, cool. Eyal, do we need to give anybody credit still before we go? Because we're almost out of time here. Or did we miss anything that you wanted to include? Eyal.
I would just say you per your question, just a quick note.
Yes.
It is a challenging role to play, but for the children, it wasn't challenging because they were just themselves, right? So they didn't need to do anything that was out of their comfort zone as much as it seems in the film. So they didn't necessarily, like the children themselves didn't go through the experience that is portrayed in the film.
Right.
Mainly because it was my directorial approach, right? Just to let them be. Right. And mainly what we did with them is work with choreography of dance, so in movement. So it was mainly physical. So, it was a fantastic, fantastic challenge. And these two are extremely, extremely talented actors.
Wow. Well, congratulations to you guys. You obviously,
thank
everything
you.
Is awesome. Fell into place for you. So tell people again, Holly Shorts, is that over? Or
yeah, that just finished.
So that's over. Yeah. So if people want to really see the film, I mean, I want to see it. So I just go on your Facebook page. I ask for it, and you guys will give me a private link. Is that how it
Yeah, works? You can message us, and then we can...
Message you. Okay,
yes,
message
yes.
you. That's an easy way to do it.
Sorry, we are discussing distribution right now after the festival circuit. So obviously, if you like the page, you will get in touch with us, and we'll know exactly if it's open.
Awesome, awesome. Hey, y'all, thank you so much for joining us from overseas
thank
this
you.
Morning.
Thank you.
Of course, it's a pleasure. And we wish you much continued success in everything you do.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Eyal. Bye-bye. Stephanie, any final things you want to, any plugs, any, how yeah. can people find you? Do you want people to find you on social media?
Sure, sure. I mean, my website is... www.sanneill.com.
Okay.
And
you're on social media probably, and people can find from there and stuff,
yes,
right?
Yes,
yeah. We're not going to give all the handles and everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter.
Stephanie,
yeah. Thanks so much, Stephanie O'Neill, for joining us.
Thank you.
You're
both
amazing.
For having me.
And congratulations on the film. I mean, you guys took on a challenge there and came away with flying colors, and I want to see it now. Now, let me ask you this. Do you guys have a teaser, like a trailer for the film that people
yes,
can see?
Yes, we do.
On
yeah.
YouTube or something, maybe?
Yeah, it's on the Facebook.
Oh, on Facebook. Okay. Go to the Facebook page, and you'll see. That makes sense. Why am I going to YouTube? All right, everybody. Thank you all for joining us. Rachel, thank
Always.
You. We'll see everybody
thank
tomorrow.
You.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.